In 1979, Liz Pryor was a 17-year-old girl from a good family in wealthy Chicago suburbs. Halfway through her senior year of high school, she discovered she was pregnant, a fact her parents were determined to keep a secret from her friends, siblings, and community, and they were determined to do so forever. One snowy January day, after driving across three states, her mother dropped her off at what Liz thought was a Catholic home for unwed mothers, but which, in truth, turned out to be a locked government-run facility for delinquent and impoverished pregnant teenage girls. Liz Pryor has written her story in the new book, Look at You Now. It is a moving story, and she shares with us this morning. Liz Pryor is an author, speaker, parenting columnist, and life advice expert. She currently serves as ABC's Good Morning America on-air life advice guru. And we welcome Liz Pryor to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. At what point did you decide you wanted to tell this story?
You know, I always had it in the back of my mind. I didn't know if I would ever come to a place where I thought I should tell the story and write the book, but I think it was very helpful. I have three teenaged children, and they were all coming of age, you know, to love and sex, and I just didn't have it in me to perpetuate the non-truth about myself, and I think it was bigger than just sort of a fabulous sex ed conversation that I thought would be pretty provoking for my kids. But I felt pretty strongly about showing them at early ages that whatever we go through in life, somehow there's a way to get through it, get beyond it, forgive yourself, and move on, and feel worthy of good living. So I sort of started out with my children, and then moved on to me thinking I wanted to share it with my family, and then moved closer to the idea of this book.
So there is that I mean, there's, of course, a difference between sharing it with your family, sharing it with your kids, and exploring it and investigating it for your own purposes of fully understanding it, and then to share it with a broader audience. And mm-hmm. I'm curious as to why you thought that was important to do.
Well, I felt it was important because I'm pretty convinced that there are a lot of people we don't know about that live with some sort of version of an untold truth. And the bigger messaging for me would be the notion that if you can find your way through standing behind whatever happens to you in your life and find sort of that strength muscle, the sort of inner strength that I think I had to work on throughout my entire life to get where I am, that people might be able to live cleaner, less stressful, happier lives.
So I told the basic story in the introduction to the to your coming on the program, and give us a sense of what those first days were like when you came to this facility and the shock that you had. You didn't end up where you thought you were going, so you end up there, and how do you process that? As a 17-year-old
kid.
Yeah,
it was terrifying. I mean, the whole notion was terrifying. And I entered those doors 3 days after I learned I was pregnant. I had sex for the first time, and almost 4 months later, it was determined that I was pregnant. So the whole thing was obviously overwhelming and completely shocking. I was terrified. I was terrified to have a child, terrified to leave my school, my family, lie to the world. And on top of it, I end up in this government-run locked facility. Now, I was not locked in. I had a pass, and you know, my last name stayed off, so I could remain anonymous. You know, it's tough to try and process so much at one time, but it is sort of amazing how much strength you have inside yourself that you don't know you have. So obviously, the first week or so was the most terrifying week of my life. I had no idea what to expect. I was actually scared for my physical safety, which I didn't need to be, ultimately. And, of course, I think the beauty of the story is there I was immersed like a fish out of water with a bunch of underprivileged girls that had spent time in juvie hall and in the foster care system or on the streets. And I was a privileged girl who 5 days earlier was on an 80-foot schooner sailing in the Caribbean. So, yes, shocking. But within a few weeks, you know, this is where human nature comes in. You know, I found my way with the girls, and they found their way with me. And ultimately, you know, the story talks about the bonds that we established with one another and this incredible common denominator of children having children together. And ultimately, I think they taught me more than anybody taught me anything in my entire life about people, about judgment, about how I thought the world was when I walked in there and how different I knew it was when I walked out.
You do point out in the book that you didn't question their decision. This was not something that you you didn't think that it was. As far as blaming,
a punishment.
It's
easy now to sort of look back on it and see that. But truthfully, no, I didn't. I don't think my mother had any clue that it would be the situation that it was. I mean, she had some broad notion. And when she got there, I think she was as shocked as I was. And to stick with sort of, you know, I write the story through the eyes of the 17-year-old. My parents were great people who had provided me an amazing life and taught me everything I know. I respected them, I revered them, and I loved them. And when they told me that my life would be ruined if people found out and I had to be here for 5.5 months in order to live a worthy and good life, I believed them. And when we got there, I think, of course, you can look back now and say we obviously had some choices. There could have been other choices, but, you know, it was a different time. It was 1979. We didn't have hovering, helicoptering parents the way we do today. I honestly think she crossed her fingers and hoped that I would get through. And, of course, if she were on the phone with us today, she'd say, look at her. She's fine. But I also, in thinking about it since I wrote it, am convinced that I don't think I could afford emotionally to get angry or upset with my parents because they were the only two people at the time who knew where I was. So it was, I think, maybe a sense of self-preservation. And I suppose the book is a broad view of forgiveness and love because I do report I don't blame them. I really did blame myself for getting myself into this situation and thought that this was the consequence I had to pay.
It is interesting to note, and without getting too psychological, although I think it certainly is interesting psychologically, of that you started to write this after your mother passed away, and I'm curious as to whether that would have been, is this something that you would have written if she were still with us?
You know, I'd say in the afterword, sort of the, you know, how the title of the book came to be, I went to her a few years before she got sick, and I said, Mom, I'm thinking I might write this story in a book. And we didn't talk about this story very often, but occasionally we did. And she, without hesitation, said, you do whatever you want, sweetheart. Look at you now.
Yeah.
I don't think, personally, that I felt I had the real key to writing every moment of this story until she was gone. I think I had lived 38 years keeping a promise to her and not sure I could have done it with her here. That may have been the beginning of the door opening to, I'd like to tell my story. I'd like the people I know and the people, you know, there's a big reaction to the people who know me for 20, 30 years, 40 years. I'm not the girl that this, apparently, that this might have happened to. And it's an interesting reaction. You know, as though I'm supposed to be a certain way if I went through something like this. And that's another sort of global reason I wanted to write the book, is to basically remind people that whatever happens in life, you really do have a choice to look left or to look right. You know, there's a scene in the book where I have to drive up alone to Indiana and sign off on this baby.
Right.
I'm 17. I'm completely freaked out. I've just had a baby. And I pull over on the road, and I sort of sit there with myself, you know, crying and screaming and scared. And I just chose in the moment on the road to, I think I just sort of looked at it like, I'm either going to look left here and trust my parents and the adoption agency and God and the universe that this baby is going to be okay and be loved, and I am going to be able to walk through the rest of my life and feel okay, or I'm going to fear that this baby is going to live a version of what I've just lived, and I'm going to feel rotten about myself and feel that if anybody ever knows the real me, that I won't be a good person. And in that, at that young age, I do believe that's the choice that sort of changed the track of my life. I sort of chose faith over fear.
It is interesting when you think about that your parents work so hard to hide you, to
yep.
hide and to put you away and to hide you. And then all these years later, you become very public. And that's quite
yes.
a juxtaposition, isn't it?
It sure is, isn't it? I mean, there's a notion, to be frank, that I have to, you know, I argue in my head that would I really have had the stamina, the endurance, and the self-belief to get through those 5.5 months had I not had the incredible foundation and bookends that my parents had given me in my life?
Yeah.
It's interesting to imagine that basically you are wonderful, smart, terrific, worthy, you know, take the world by a storm person. As long as people don't know this story, that's a big burden to carry. It's called shame. And I think I had to work through that shame on my own. And in the book, you know, there are many scenes as you watch me sort of work through it and perhaps accept myself and forgive myself. But as I walk out after, it really was my choice as to how I was going to move forward. If this was going to change me really, really negatively. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had the wherewithal that I have now to articulate this. But I do, when I look back, I think that's what happened.
Is when you say work through it, obviously, that's living life and getting older and also maturing. Was there therapy involved as well?
You know, not really.
Yeah.
I had a big podcast with a big therapist. I did. When I got pregnant, when I got married, I really went through some tough stuff when I got pregnant with my first child. You know, I had there's two sides to carrying, you know, a secret. One is that it's terribly lonely. And you can't talk to anybody about it. And the other is that it does seem to work a muscle of strength and inner strength. And maybe if I were a different kind of person, it would have gone differently. But when I got pregnant with my daughter, I went and saw a therapist for about 2 months. And I told her the story. She was the first notion, and I was 30, that it ever dawned on me that this maybe was a bad idea. That I really didn't understand that until this woman said it to me. And that pushed me to my mother, you know, at the age of 30, 31, and I asked her, you know, if she thought it was a good idea for me to have to lie to everybody I knew for the rest of my life. And, you know, she really answered with her big heart, you know, Liz, I was doing the best I could. And in the book, I hope people get that she was, you know, a fairly sheltered, you know, privileged woman who grew up and got married to a man, had 7 children. He left her. She was working for the first time in her life. She was living sort of the perfect storm. And then her daughter came home pregnant. And she says, you know, maybe I should have done it differently. And she said she was sorry, but that's about all it was. And then she looked at me and said, but look, you're great. So I don't know.
But wouldn't you expect, well, I'll ask in the form of a question, not leading the witness, but are you, meaning, so would you expect your daughter to be angry at you if you did the same thing to her?
Yes, you know, that's the first time I've ever had that question posed. I am such a different mother. I would not have made these choices for my daughter, and beyond the fact that it's 40 years later. Yes, and I can see how people would imagine that. But even when you say it, and this must just be, you know, my psychology, I take such responsibility for having had reckless sex and getting myself into this situation. And this is begs the question in terms of parenting today. You know, how much are kids responsible for? Yes, I was a minor child, and my parents had the means to pick a million different places for me to go. But this is the way it went down. I can't help but to compare what we're doing today with kids and what was going on back then. You know, the pendulum possibly needs to swing to the middle, because today, you know, my parents didn't even know which colleges I applied to. And these parents today are writing their children's college essays. So, you know, people who grew up in my generation, we are astounded at how much we do for our kids. This would never happen to anybody I know today, because we don't even let our kids walk to school alone, let alone go in a underprivileged facility for 5.5 months. So it's I can imagine that I would expect my daughter to have anger toward me if this happened. But when you pose it to me personally, I actually see my parents' faces and think that they would not imagine I would be mad at them. I still think they imagine, you know, what a horrible mistake I made and what a black sheep and what a stupid thing to do. That's the truth.
But we all do stupid things. And and there are ways of dealing with them. And I mean, the thing that really struck me in the book is that your mom visited you only twice. Your father visited you just once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to read that and not think that there's a detachment there that would cause you to hold a deep anger.
You know, I have tried to look into this, and even the podcast I had with a pretty good psychiatrist, you know, maybe there's a bunch of denial there. Here's what I will tell you. The effect, the overspill of consequence within my family has been enormous. It has been the largest and most painful consequence of anything about this experience. I was wedged straight into a very emotionally difficult position with all of my siblings and community imagining underneath everything that I may have gone and had a baby and no one being able to discuss it. That really is the damage that sticks with you. And could we blame that on my parents? I don't know. I blame it on our culture, my community, the privileged world. But that would be more the psychological stuff that is difficult. And I think I blame my parents and myself equally. I also blame, you know, if you have to point fingers, I blame the culture, the community, the judgment, the way in which communities of the overprivileged roll.
Yeah.
And that involves everybody. So I guess the best lesson I learned coming out of it was the way I wanted to be able to teach my children to see people, see the world, widen their view. I am a walking example of someone who you don't know what they've lived through till you walk in their shoes. And you know, if there is denial and avoidance and some deep-seated anger inside of me, I'm kind of unaware of it.
Well, Liz,
I think I'm a fact kind of person. This is the way they were. This is what happened. This is how I feel about it. I don't know if I'm in charge enough to say I'm going to choose to think positively, but there is this bizarre self-preservation thing that comes in when you are faced with your gravest adversity. You either cheerlead for yourself or you fall apart. And they did raise kids. And a psychiatrist on the phone on the podcast asked me, did I think I was stronger than the rest of the siblings in my family?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question, because I would say no. They're all extraordinarily strong. I mean, I don't know how they would have handled this particular situation. So how am I different? At this point, I think it's simply my view of the world, how I see people and how I see things. That's the thing that's different about me from the rest of my family because of this. And it's not been easy for me within the family because of that.
Well, Liz Pryor has written her story in the new book, Look at You Now. Liz, I thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for the good questions.
Thank you very much. Again, okay. Liz Pryor's new book is Look at You Now. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.